could not be halted, and the island of Sileia was overwhelmed by the sea, and all on it perished. Those were men in whom great strength and knowledge served the will to evil and fed upon it. Whether the wizardry that serves a better end may always prove the stronger, we do not know. We hope. There is a certain bleakness in finding hope where one expected certainty. Aran found himself unwilling to stay on these cold summits. He said after a little while, "I see why you say that only men do evil, I think. Even sharks are innocent. They kill because they must. That is why nothing else can resist us. Only one thing in the world can resist an evil-hearted man. And that is another man. In our shame is our glory. Only our spirit, which is capable of evil, is capable of overcoming it." "But the dragons," said Aran, "do they not do great evil? Are they innocent?" "The dragons! The dragons are avaricious, insatiable, treacherous, without pity, without remorse. But are they evil? Who am I to judge the acts of dragons? They are wiser than men are. It is with them as with dreams, Aran. We men dream dreams. We work magic. We do good. We do evil. The dragons do not dream. They are dreams. They do not work magic. It is their substance, their being. They do not do. They are." "In Serilun," said Aran, "is the skin of Bar-Oth, killed by Keor, prince of Enlad, 300 years ago. No dragons have ever come to Enlad since that day. I saw the skin of Bar-Oth. It is heavy as iron, and so large that if it were spread out it would cover all the marketplace of Serilun, they said. The teeth are as long as my forearm. Yet they said Bar-Oth was a young dragon, not full grown." "There is a desire in you," said Sparrowhawk, "to see dragons."
"Yes."
"Their blood is cold and venomous. You must not look into their eyes. They are older than mankind." He was silent a while and then went on, "And though I came to forget or regret all I have ever done, yet would I remember that once I saw the dragons aloft on the wind at sunset above the western isles, and I would be content." Both were silent then, and there was no sound but the whispering of the water with the boat, and no light. So at last, there on the deep waters, they slept. In the bright haze of morning they came into Hort Harbor, where 100 craft were moored or setting forth. Fishermen's boats, crabbers, trawlers, trading ships, 2 galleys of 20 oars, 1 great 60-oared galley in bad repair, and some lean, long sailing ships with high triangular sails designed to catch the upper airs and the hot calms of the South Reach. "Is that a ship of war?" Aran asked as they passed one of the 20-oared galleys, and his companion answered, "A slaver, I judge, from the chain bolts in her hold. They sell men in the South Reach." Aran pondered this a minute, then went to the gearbox and took from it his sword, which he had wrapped well and stowed away on the morning of their departure. He uncovered it. He stood indecisive, the sheathed sword on his 2 hands, the belt dangling from it. "It's no sea trader's sword," he said. "The scabbard is too fine." Sparrowhawk, busy at the tiller, shot him a look. "Wear it if you like. I thought it might be wise. As swords go, that one is wise, said his companion, his eyes alert on their passage through the crowded bay. Is it not a sword reluctant to be used? Arran nodded. So they say. Yet it has killed. It has killed men. He looked down at the slender, hand-worn hilt. It has, but I have not. It makes me feel a fool. It is too much older than I. I shall take my knife, he ended, and rewrapping the sword, shoved it down deep in the gearbox. His face was perplexed and angry. Sparrowhawk said nothing till he asked, Will you take the oars now, lad? We are heading for the pier there by the stairs. Horttown, one of the seven great ports of the archipelago, rose from its noisy waterfront up the slopes of three steep hills in a jumble of color. The houses were of clay, plastered in red, orange, yellow, and white. The roofs were of purplish-red tile. Pendic trees and flower made masses of dark red along the upper streets. Gaudy, striped awnings stretched from roof to roof, shading narrow marketplaces. The quays were bright with sunlight. The streets running back from the waterfront were like dark slots full of shadows and people and noise. When they had tied up the boat, Sparrowhawk stooped over beside Arran as if to check the knot, and he said, Arran, there are people in Wathort who know me pretty well, so watch me that you may know me. When he straightened up, there was no scar on his face. His hair was quite gray, his nose was thick and somewhat snubbed, and instead of a yew staff his own height, he carried a wand of ivory, which he tucked away inside his shirt. Dost know me? He said to Arran, with a broad smile, and he spoke with the accent of Enlad. Hast never seen thine...